And I just also didn't go all out to try to say, what can I do within these rules to build the most competitive car possible? I just knew what car I wanted to build. I built it. I'm going to go out. I'm going to run it.
And it lands where it lands.
And it lands where it lands. And I'm going to go out, have fun. I mean, the whole point of Time Attack is to race the clock and race yourself, right? Yeah. I don't want to be running wheel to wheel. I can't write this car off in that fashion and let somebody else, you know, destroy it. But I, 100% want to go out. I want to compete in this car and see just how far I can push it.
That's awesome. I mean,
what's up, folks? Today's episode is brought to you in part by Harry's. I love Harry's. I love Harry's razors so much that even in the times when they weren't sponsoring this podcast, I kept using Harry's. Yes, it is true that I started using Harry's because they sent me a sample pack because we were doing ads. But then you know what happened? I liked it. They dropped off our advertising radar for a little while, and I kept buying Harry's. It was a great value. It was great quality. And now you can give that cool factor plus the value and the quality to someone else in your life because it's gift season. Giving a great gift can make you look good, and giving the gift of Harry's to the men on your list can make them look good too. I love the blades, right? These cartridges, they're extremely high quality, and they are affordable. They're way, way more affordable than some of those other brands you're probably thinking of. Five blades on the cartridge, four on the front and one on the back. Beautifully weighted handle with a rubberized grip. I shave my head and face in the shower, so it's very important that even when that grip gets wet, that I have a good handle on it. It's got the foaming shave gel, which I love. Thick, rich, and delightful. You know what I've just done? I've realized that I get a much better shave when I put the foaming shave gel on. And then I let it sit there for a minute. It's too easy to put it on and then go straight to your shave. You got to give it a second to work. So you foam it up, let it sit for 2-3 minutes, and then that hair, those follicles are nice and soft, and they come off real easy with those blades. The starter set, here's what we're talking about because it's a holiday. It includes a 5-blade German-engineered razor, a weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel color cover. It's a $13 value for only $3 if you use my link, harrys.com/tire. You can schedule blades to be delivered whenever you need them, right? Us men have a pretty regular shaving schedule, whether it's once a day, once a week, or once a month. You can schedule those blades that way. Right when you think, oh man, I'm going to run out of blades soon, boom, package shows up. Each refill is as low as $2. You never have to go to the store and buy blades again. Harry's new holiday gift boxes include premium shaving and grooming products in gift boxes nice enough to go right under the tree with no wrapping required. So check off all the guys on your list with a Harry's starter set. First-time buyers get a $13 value for just $3 at harrys.com/tire and check out those Harry's gift boxes. But act fast. These offers are for a limited time with limited stock at harrys.com/tire. Also, it's about those Berryman products. You know them. We've been talking about them for months now. And over the years, Berryman Products has developed a reputation and a loyal following among professional mechanics and weekend gearheads alike. Along the way, Berryman has been recognized on numerous occasions for its quality and innovation. At this year's Apex show in Vegas, Berryman's B33 engine degreaser was named the winner in the performance packaging category, beating out over 80 other entries in the process. It's quite an honor for a company with a 100-plus year history, but not surprising when you consider that Berryman Products has continually introduced the best automotive lubricants, additives, and cleaners on the market. Today, the Berryman name is found on over 80 different products, including the B33 engine degreaser. And Berryman's newly packaged B33 engine degreaser is specially formulated with high-performance detergents and emulsifiers to easily penetrate road grime, dirt, grease, and oil. The fast spray-on, rinse-off cycle saves time and conserves water. B33 engine degreaser works on vehicle engines, small engine parts, lawnmowers, hand tools, machinery, fleet, farm, and marine equipment. Best of all, B33 contains no phosphates, abrasives, solvents, or VOCs. For more than 100 years, the Berryman name has been synonymous with performance and dependability, but it's also nice to be noticed for your looks. So look for Berryman products at all major automotive retailers or on the net at berrymanproducts.com. Berrymanproducts.com. And now, let's talk about meat. My favorite part of the holiday season is not the gifts, it's not the snow, it's the meat. I love the meat. And ButcherBox is where we get the meat. ButcherBox takes the guesswork out of finding high-quality meat and seafood you can trust, whether it's grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Everything is humanely raised with no antibiotics or added hormones. I got this new smoker. I've been talking about it, this Z-Grill smoker. It's one of these pellet joints, real easy. And I just cannot wait to get it filled with meat. And ButcherBox is the ultimate in meaty convenience. Get just what you want delivered right to your doorstep. Free shipping for the continental U.S. and no surprise fees. There's a huge variety of box plan options from curated to customized, and you can change your plan whenever you want. I love these meats. I love the strips. I love the ribeyes. I love the burgers. I love the bacon. I love the chicken. Even that salmon is delicious. And I have made many, many Hanukkah dinners with ButcherBox steaks. We like to eat ribeyes for Hanukkah, and I am into that. I've sent ButcherBoxes to my friends, to my family members, and I love when a box of meat shows up at my door. It means I don't have to go to the grocery store and find this. Yeah, I don't really, the quality could be iffy, right? With ButcherBox, I know I'm getting delicious, fresh meat. It's convenient. The cost is right. The quality is great. And I am into all that. So this holiday season, make it better and tastier with ButcherBox. For a limited time, they're offering our listeners ground beef for life and $10 off your first order. If you order a plan and you get a regular delivery, for the life of that plan, they will include free ground beef for life and $10 off your first order. So sign up today at butcherbox.com/tire and use code TIRE to get $10 off your first box and ground beef for the life of your membership. That's butcherbox.com/tire and use code TIRE. You got to do double TIRE. butcherbox.com/tire, code TIRE to claim this deal. Ground beef for life, baby. That's where it's at. All right, then, on this episode of the podcast, Mike Burrows of Stanceworks is in studio. This guy built one of the most talked about vehicles at the SEMA show this year, a Ferrari 308 GTB with a 1,000 horsepower Honda turbo engine swap, a crazy JDM style time attack aero kit. And we want to know how he did it, why he did it, and everything about this amazing car. Not going to lie, pretty much this whole show is about this one car. But there's so much to talk about, the attention to detail, the things that needed re-engineering and reworking. And as a fan of the 308 and 328, this is a topic that I find to be very, very interesting. Mike is always an excellent guest. He really knows his stuff, and the amount of work that went into this car is just unbelievable. So from Stanceworks, Mike Burrows is here on the Smoking Tire Podcast.
Good to have you back. You had a hell of a SEMA.
It was a very busy SEMA. It was a unique SEMA this time around. Obviously having a car there,
yeah,
which is familiar. But now that I've been doing the YouTube thing, I am a recognizable person.
Oh, yeah.
Not to your scale, but still constantly
being
people
at,
coming
being
up.
Being at SEMA and being a celebrity is exhausting.
I don't know if we're going to use the C word yet, but it's it was, yeah. It
Sometimes you just got to piss. You just got to get to the bathroom.
That happened.
And you're like, dude,
Appreciate that you're into it. I'm trying to have to make it there.
I promise I will come and say hi. Yeah.
So
that was why 2020 was the best SEMA.
Ghost Town SEMA?
Masks. Fucking, I'm unrecognizable now. Yes. But damn, that Ferrari got a lot of fucking love. That thing was, I was blown up my Instagram for
I was
a week.
Very pleased with the response. Obviously, yeah. You would be. I expected people to be excited about the car. But
in that picture, the door is open, so it looks a little awkward. The door is cracked. It's not actually janky looking on the passenger side door.
I like to think it looks pretty good. It's the response was incredible. Everybody wanted to talk about the car, all the different press outlets and what have you. And honestly, only a handful of guys coming up really complaining about what I had done to it.
Because they thought you'd ruined a car?
Yeah. Got a couple of those. But.
Yeah, I mean, fuck that. Whatever. As someone who owns a stock one, I don't give a shit. Like, I'll represent people who own stock ones community, and I don't give a fuck.
Perfect.
I think it looks cool. I did, you know, when I when you first got it and said, here's what you're going to do, I did say, like, publicly and privately, like, that's not what I would do. But,
of course.
This is your thing. This is your gig. Like,
yeah. It's one of those things. So a lot of people.
I am bummed it's not yellow. Yellow was good. I liked the yellow. I thought it would have been cool staying yellow, but.
It will be yellow. So it's just wrapped.
Uh-huh.
But my logic behind not keeping the car yellow at the moment was I don't want to wrap the car yellow because that makes then going and spending like $10,000 to paint it yellow and to get the same thing but have it just be a bit glossier.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tough check to write.
Right.
So I said, let's change the color for now. It'll give me a sense of like completion. It'll feel different. It'll punctuate the entire build up to this point. So I went with white because I figured body in white.
Well, white's not bad. Cool. Plus Honda championship white.
Exactly.
And it's when you've got, you know, a lot of the sort of wide body JDM kind of things, they do white. So
yeah,
it's not
sense.
Like it doesn't make sense. I just happen to like that
the yellow is cool.
Is a rare color for a 308. If that's is that the factory yellow?
Factory yellow.
Yeah, it's a pretty rare color for a GTB. And it's a very nice yellow. It's a rich color.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, some Porsche yellows are kind of terrible.
Yeah.
It's a good yellow.
It's kind of a bummer because the car that I started with was by far the nicest car I have ever owned. And that's not like a short list. I'm
did
not
it
a
work
car collector.
When you bought it?
Oh yeah.
It
I bought
did?
I bought a very nice car. I mean, running, driving, all the records, every piece of literature came with it. Not a speck of rust. Beautiful paint, beautiful interior. It was a nice car. And so there is a part of me that feels bad for, in some sense, trashing that. But you build enough cars, you realize you should absolutely start with the best one you can buy.
Well, that's
every
the problem.
Time.
You know, there's people on the internet who complain about ruining a nice one. But the fact is, it doesn't matter whether you're a collector or a builder.
Yeah.
Everybody wants the clean car.
Of course.
It's just way more annoying to unfuck it, you know. You know, you're start doing fucking rust repair on this thing. It's
no,
like,
we're not going there.
There's no point to that. So
started,
whatever.
Started with the nicest car that I could find. It wound up being way nicer than I anticipated it being. Honestly, my criteria for finding a car was it had to be a coupe. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want the spider top for the 308. Had to have the hard top. So in hunting for those, you know, I mean, the price they're going to command a price premium. They're more rare. They're more desirable, but honestly, as long as I could find one that hadn't been like crashed or, you know, it was super rusty, it was fine with me because I knew what I was going to do from the get-go.
It's too bad. I wish I knew you were looking at the time because like Donnie, who works on my car.
I reached out to him.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So he didn't have anything for you?
Not at the time.
Yeah.
He actually is snagging pretty much all the parts that I took off of the car.
That's cool. That's a good move.
So
I was going to suggest that.
He was giving away these parts and I was like, hey man, you should DM this guy Ferrari 966. And he's like, okay. And then that's great.
Yeah. So he bought your engine and shit?
So I sold the engine on Bring a Trailer over a year ago at this point. But pretty much everything else off the car, I've kept it all. Why wouldn't you? So all the suspension components, the brakes, all that kind of stuff. A handful of body pieces, a lot of the engine electronics and whatnot.
Oh, yeah. Donnie wants all of that shit.
All that stuff.
Yeah.
I was talking to him and I said, honestly, like, I know that I could get a bunch for this if I'm really patient and put it all on eBay or find the right people. But if somebody would just take this off my hands, all in one go, like, I'll cut you a deal.
Yeah.
And he was like, that sounds perfect. Let's make this happen.
Great.
So as soon as he comes back from Hawaii, we're going to
cool.
make that happen. Yeah, but yeah, good. He didn't have anything at the time. I did reach out to him because he has a white car, right?
His car is very nice. Yeah. His white car is very nice. But he always, like, he always has a few cars that he's storing for clients, and some of them are better than others. And like, I figured he would know where to find one that was, you know, for other people would have been, it was like not crashed or rusty, but like, this thing needs a $40,000 major, you know, anyway. And
yeah,
if you're
yeah.
pulling the motor out, whatever.
No, I tried to buy a couple
different
cars.
That's cool. He's getting the parts, though.
Yeah.
Bet you some of that shit ends up in my car eventually.
Fingers crossed. No, it's funny because a lot of people get upset about trashing this car and what I've done, but it's like, in reality, I've put more cars back on the road.
Yeah.
There's a net gain of 308s on the road. Because the guy that bought the engine, it wound up, I think I shipped it to like, it might have gone to Italy or something like that. It went overseas. And then another guy bought a whole bunch of other parts that I was selling. So it's like, you know, I feel like I've done a good thing here.
Yeah, so if your car is still on the road and it still is a 308. And you scavenged parts that caused two other 308s to get on the road, that is a net positive.
Yeah, and then also we just have to be realistic about the fact that like the 308 is not bottom of the barrel Ferrari, but it's not far from the bottom.
Yeah.
So it's like, we're not talking about an exceptionally rare car or an exceptionally valuable car. So the guys that are upset about it, they can get over it.
Yeah. Unless you are like buying them all up yourself to save them, shut the fuck up.
So,
like, yeah. No, that's cool. It looks great. Does it work?
So it does run and drive at this point.
Okay.
It drove into SEMA under its own power. That was my main goal. I said, I'm not going to have a pusher into SEMA.
Yeah,
that
would be the
status
worst.
Quo. I'm not doing that. So we did get it running, got it driving. It runs really well. Hopefully going to get to the dyno like next week.
Okay.
I'm going to have to play with the whole Thanksgiving thing. But get to the dyno, get the actual, you know, like real power tune on it. Make sure this is all kind of ready to go, and then head to the track and start sorting this thing out from a dynamic
standpoint. You actually want to drive it on the track?
Yes.
I built this thing to run it in Global Time Attack, NDF Attack Challenge, and just to go race myself. The car's not going to be competitive. I have to like say that. It's not built to maximize the rule set for so it's going to be in the Global Time Attack Limited class. That's kind of where it lands based on what I've done to it.
I don't know how the class system works for that series. It's
essentially, you've got a handful of classes. You've got, like, the bottom is Enthusiast class. That's like you come out and you run your largely stock car. You have Street class, which is quite aggressive, but you still have to have full interior. What tips me over to going towards Limited class is if you put a different make engine in the car, then you're in Limited. And then the car also has a sequential. So we haven't identified it yet for anybody that's listening. The whole thing about the car is that it has a Honda K24 four-cylinder in the back of it. It's no longer a V8. So by going with a Honda engine, it forced me into the Limited group. Being in the Limited group, I would be up against some very radical machines. It's next to the top. You only have Unlimited after that, which is Run What You Brung.
Yeah.
So being in Limited class, the cars, I mean, as you know, the chassis under these things is from the 60s.
Yeah.
And just kind of like upgraded as they went. So we're talking about like a 60s chassis that I've done my best with, but that's still by far going to be the oldest stuff out there.
Yeah.
And I just also didn't go all out to try to say, what can I do within these rules to build the most competitive car possible? I just knew what car I wanted to build. I built it. I'm going to go out. I'm going to run it.
And it lands where it lands.
And it lands where it lands. And I'm going to go out, have fun. I mean, the whole point of Time Attack is to race the clock and race yourself, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to be running wheel to wheel. I can't write this car off in that fashion and let somebody else, you know, destroy it. But I, 100%, want to go out. I want to compete in this car and see just how far I can push it.
That's awesome.
I mean, I like where your head's at. Did you have a powertrain in mind from the beginning?
Yeah, 100%. So I knew from the get-go, before I bought the car, before I even started searching for one, what the overall plan was going to be. Now, of course, there's like a bit of scope creep when you undertake a project of this size, so I didn't anticipate it going this far with the level of work and like completely redesigning all of the suspension, but I knew I was going to use a Honda K24. I knew that the V8 was just going to get the boot, sell it off, use that.
Because other people have done turbocharging on that V8.
Yeah,
and it revs to 8. Like, it's possible.
It is. So it's a good engine. I couldn't ever say that it's not. That wouldn't be fair. The big reasons for changing and going with a Honda K-Series is I needed a handful. There was a handful of criteria. So one, I needed to stick with something that was transverse engine. If I was going to swap it, right? It's transverse V8. Everybody says, why wouldn't you pick a 2JZ or an LS or whatever? Well, it's like, unless you're going to go with an LS4 out of an Impala, like it's not going to fit unless you want to stretch the car. Not going there. So needed a transverse engine layout. There are some from, you know, like rear mid-engine cars that would work, but not many, given the fact that I also need something with a ton of R&D behind it.
Right.
I want something that
could have gone with like an Evora V6, maybe.
Could have. But I also wanted something cheap.
Yeah.
Because when you're racing, you're gonna blow your shit up. And I know I'm going to blow this thing up, and I want to be able to replace it without, you know, having to absolutely break the bank. As we were talking about downstairs, you can call up 4-Piston Racing, the top name in K-Series race engines, and have a 1,000-horsepower long block delivered to your door for like $12,000. That's pretty hard to compete with in any other arena.
Especially if you eliminate all longitudinal setups.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're going to, like, nix the LS platform.
It's a lot for a 4-cylinder, though.
Oh, it's a lot. It's a lot.
Is that like a billet block?
It's not a billet block. It's still just a factory block. It's sleeved and all that jazz.
Mm-hmm.
But it is an endurance engine. So they say you can run this through a full season of racing. This is meant to last. This is not a drag engine.
Wait, did you say 1,000 horsepower?
1,000 horsepower.
So 1,000 horsepower.
The long block, right? You then have to.
Yeah, I mean, you got to furnish it with, you know, the turbo and the manifolds and, you know, all the other gear you're going to need to make an engine work, but that's the oil pan to valve cover. Now, we went dry sump because the K-Series engine's really tall, does not even come close to fitting in the back of a Ferrari, nowhere close. So dry sump was needed. I mean, obviously there are performance benefits, but main reason was to get the height of the thing down so it would fit in the back of the car. But yeah, so I needed something with a huge power ceiling. I wanted a ton of R&D behind it. K-Series motors are raced at racetracks across the U.S., across the world, every weekend, nonstop. Every problem that somebody's going to have had with these engines, they've figured it out. There's information. I needed something lightweight. I'm trying to compete. I want to shave as much weight as possible. And so that was probably the biggest drawback from the factory V8, is that when I pulled the engine and transmission out of the car with the accessories mounted to it, I weighed it 850 pounds.
Oof.
It's a considerable portion of the weight of the car.
Yeah,
and
the whole car is like 2,800.
3,200 pounds I weighed mine bone stock. Yeah, so just all original.
It's hilarious. Ferrari fucking
they
lied.
Give dry weights.
They lied about the weight of that car for years.
Yeah, so I put it on the scales. It was like 3,162 without the spare in the front of it, and like I think I'd already drained the coolant out of it.
Okay.
Or what have you. So 3,200 pounds. So the net weight change was worth it. We actually weighed the car earlier this week. It is now 2,377 pounds.
Oh, yeah.
So that's almost 1,000 pounds lighter, and that's without composite, you know, panels on the car and all that jazz. So
it's like, just taking shit out.
Yeah.
Pretty
and
much.
But it's still full interior. Car is completely finished on the inside. Has all of the amenities aside from air conditioning that it had from the factory, still full power windows and all that kind of stuff. So it's
Does it have like leather door cards still? Or does
Door panels are full black suede. It's fully carpeted inside, full center console. It has
those are not the original door cards.
They are
door cards, but they're not the originals.
They actually are. They're just modified. So we pulled the original fabric off of the door card, original leather off, cleaned all the holes that were in like the fight because it's made of fiberglass.
Yeah.
So cleaned all the holes, plugged all the holes, all that kind of stuff, and then really simplified it. Pulled those long armrests off.
Yeah.
And gave it. I really just wanted like a simple door card. I wanted it to feel like an F40 or something like RSR or what have you.
Yeah.
So simplified interior, very minimalistic, utilitarian, but complete and still comfortable. Mm-hmm. You know. So it is in every sense like a finished car inside.
Yeah.
And it still has, I mean, thanks to the Haltech system that we're running, I mean, it has cruise control. I mean, it's fully set up. Huh. It's got it all. It is a sequential, as you can see. So that was another limitation. Obviously sequential, really cool race car, blah, blah, blah.
Not a lot of transverse sequentials, though, right?
There are quite a few for, the, for this platform.
Do they use them for FITs and RSXs and stuff
Yeah, so it's
that?
An RSX transmission. But the biggest reason to go for it is there are so few or transmission options that will withstand huge power levels. Mm-hmm. This transmission is what everybody with these motors goes with if you're going to make an obscene power figure. So in picking the engine, it was you know, again, weight, power, R&D, aftermarket support, and cost. And laying all those out on the table and looking at literally anything that I could put in it, I genuinely think it makes the most sense. I won't argue that it's the most romantic. You know, getting rid of that Ferrari V8 does take something away from the car that it probably should have. But if you're not looking for romance and you just want to go fast, I think that we're there.
Sure. Does the steering system... Is that the stock steering system?
So it still has the original rack. The only Ferrari parts left on the entire car that would have a Ferrari part number would be the steering rack and the steering column.
Okay.
And those are not going to be around for long. But yeah.
What are you trying to switch those out with?
I'll probably go with a Woodward racing rack. So
just
it'll still be manual.
Motorsport grade.
Yeah,
stuff.
Just something that I know is going to be up to the task of, you know, getting 275s in the front thrown around and bashing curbs and all that kind of stuff.
Well, 275s in the front, that's going to be really heavy steering.
So I actually was having a full discussion about this yesterday on
YouTube.
Because
the steering wheel looks smaller diameter than stock.
Small steering wheel. So with the car, as you guys can see, it has wide fender flares on all four corners. And when I got these flares, the manufacturer told me, you're going to need a 10.5-inch wide wheel for the front with a negative 81 offset, which is insane.
Like huge.
It's insane.
Yeah.
I have never heard of wheels that low.
Are those
low
flares made for the 308?
They are, yeah.
Wow. Who makes those?
They're from Liberty Walk, which it's normally I'm not a Liberty Walk guy, a bit too aggressive, but these flares I thought really looked good on the car. Like it could be a period.
What options do you have for a 308?
There you can do like all the 208 bodywork stuff, or you can get the Group 4, the Michelotto type of stuff. But I saw these flares, I thought they looked great, and that was kind of what I went with. But yeah, a negative 81 offset wheel in the front, it was. I quickly realized I was going to have this problem with scrub radius. The scrub radius on the car would just be fucked. It just was not going to work. So that was this concept, or that's kind of where the concept of I'm going to redesign all of the suspension on this car from the ground up. I need to fix the scrub radius. I could just push the control arms out, and then change the offset of the wheel to counteract it.
Yeah, that's like what BBI does with their RWB kits to fix that.
And so that was initially what I thought I would do, but the back of these cars, and I don't know if the 328 is the same way, but there's kind of a known problem where if you put a really sticky tire on those things in the back, there's a design flaw on like the drive axle hub flange where there's like a sharp corner cut where there should be a fillet. And with really sticky tires, you can even with a factory engine, you can get that axle to snap and the wheel comes off.
Oh.
Ooh.
Well, I mean, on my car, you know, we run... You're limited in tire options.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't, there's a limited number of tires that come in a 16 anyway. So we run a Continental Sport Contact, which is a nice tire. It's not crazy sticky.
Yeah.
It's not certainly not a slick or a semi-slick or anything close to that. So I've never heard of that happening with these tires.
You probably won't have that problem. I think it really comes from like guys who are going to put, you know, let's say a 17 or an 18 and they say, oh, I want to put an R comp on this thing. I want to put a really sticky
track
tire.
Yeah, I imagine you could have some fucking problems there. Yeah.
I don't want my rear wheels to fly off. No. So I had to come up with a solution for the back end of the car. I realized, well, if I'm going to adapt Honda transmission, you know, outputs to the hub, I'm going to need custom stuff anyway. So if I'm going to change it in the rear, let's change it in the front. So I just literally tossed all the Ferrari stuff in a bin and said, let's start from square one. Mainly to fix the scrub radius.
Yeah.
So we can dive into all the changes for the suspension, but what's pretty cool is so I haven't driven the car on the track yet, obviously. I mean, I've driven it around the block, around the shop, all that kind of stuff. We got to get it tuned. But
is it just running on like wastegate now, basically?
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, I'm not going to get into the boost yet.
Yeah.
But sitting in the parking lot at the shop, standing outside of the car, window down, 275s on the ground, R comps, you can, at full arm's length, turn the wheel like it has power steering. It is absolutely perfect. Huh. And so that is my first sign that I got all my geometry right.
That's so cool.
Because the scrub radius is dead nuts. Oh, it is cool. Super easy to turn. I've had people watch yesterday's episode where I covered it and say, man, I've got X, Y, or Z car with manual steering and factory tires on it, and like it's nowhere close to that easy to turn.
Yeah, I mean, I don't particularly enjoy parallel parking my stock 328. Like, this, it's not great. Yeah,
this thing is, it is remarkably easy to turn. It feels like it has power steering. I think if I didn't tell you, you'd think, oh, wow, you added.
How many suspension books did you read to get to this place where you're like, I nailed this?
Books? I have one or two books that I like referenced. I'm not a reader, which is probably a problem.
Yeah. But was it a matter of like moving stuff around?
Oh yeah. Or? So the only criteria for it was I wanted to leave the suspension pickup points on the Ferrari side in place because repositioning those in 3D space is opening up a can of worms. And we also know that Ferrari did a good job with the suspension geometry of the car. It's known
for how well it handles pretty well for what it is. I mean,
so I said, let me work with that, modify what I need to with respect to the chassis side, but then go out from the chassis and build from scratch. So there are a handful of pieces of software and calculators and online calculators that I used where I plotted out all of the information that I had available to me, such as what uprights I wanted to use, how I had modified them, where the upper and lower ball joint spacing in 3D space was going to be, where those inside pickup points are, and then start mapping out things like the roll center, instant centers. You can start figuring out your scrub radius, but you have to know a lot of information to feed into the calculator. It's only going to give you as good information as you put in, right? Mm. So there was a lot of trial and error. There's kind of this running joke of how many times I've redone the control arms on the car because there's 8 control arms, four upper, four lower.
Now, when you say redone, do you mean like you remade them in CAD or something? Or
No. Like fully fabricated.
Fully fabricated. Okay.
Yeah, there is a pile of control arms at the shop. I've probably made 30 in total.
Wow.
In order to get it perfect. And that's not like, oh, I got it done and realized this was wrong, but as you go through, you realize, oh, I could change this and affect this in that way. Because every change you make starts really throwing everything off, right? So you realize, oh, I could improve this here. I could improve that there. And where I have it now, I'm really happy with it. I know that the instant centers, so essentially the way that the suspension articulates, the points at which it all rotates around, they look really good. The roll center of the car should be in a really nice place. Things like the camber curve. So I have right now about a degree of camber gain per inch of travel, and I can also adjust that, which is really nice. So once I kind of see how much travel I'm going to see on the track, we can start tinkering with it. The caster on the car is set up right where I want it. I got it set right now at 7 degrees. All of it adjustable.
What stock do you remember?
I don't remember what stock is on the 308. I don't even know that I measured what was on the car to begin with.
Yeah.
Because it was just all going to go away.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I feel good that if the scrub radius is right, because I felt like that was the hardest thing to nail. That was the one I had the most challenge with figuring out in CAD and on paper. If I got that one right, I feel like I'm great on the other ones. Because I can cycle the suspension on a car and see what it does with angle gauges and stuff. And I've already done that. It all looks good. The scrub radius had to wait till I got the car on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Folks, today's episode is also brought to you by Athletic Greens and their product AG1. I take AG1 every day because I'll tell you what. I don't always get enough vitamins in my diet. I don't always get enough minerals in my diet. I try, but I just can't always do it, and I wanted the guarantee. So AG1 is here. It doesn't taste like it's super healthy. It's got this mild tropical taste that I kind of look forward to each morning. Reminds me of sort of an orange juice type stuff. AG1 has so much good stuff in it that you don't have to think about eating, getting your vitamins and minerals with every single meal. They cover you. You're absorbing 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, whole food sourced superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help start your day right. It helps give you energy. It supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, your recovery focus, and it's got anti-aging property. All the things. I chug that stuff down right before my coffee, first thing in the morning. It helps give me that energy throughout the day. The taste is good. You know, it's definitely a nutrition thing. It's not like you're eating ice cream over here. You know you're getting those vitamins, and you got to drink it pretty fast. But it's with those travel packets, it's easy to carry around. You know, when you go to like Europe or something, it's all like breads and meats. They don't know what a salad is over there. That's why the AG1 helps me stay healthy on these long road trips. I am very, very into it. It's affordable. Less than $3 a day, right? It's way cheaper than getting all those different supplements yourself, and it's an all-in-one thing. Plus, all this good stuff like being a climate-neutral certified company, right? They donate to organizations helping to get nutritious food to kids in need, including No Kid Hungry here in the U.S. In 2020, they donated over 1.2 million meals to kids. Plus, AG1 supports better sleep quality and recovery. It contains less than 1 gram of sugar, no GMOs, no nasty chemicals or artificial anything, and still somehow tastes good. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop in a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. And so to make it super, super easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1 year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your purchase. I love those travel packs. Make it easy to have AG1 anywhere in the world. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/tire. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/tire. athleticgreens.com/tire to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
It feels fantastic. So yeah, the steering feels amazing in it.
That's super cool. I mean,
very impressive.
Because the low speed weight at my car with stock everything, you know, if once you're going over, you know, 15,
sure,
it's great, but like literally like parallel parking sucks, you know,
so. Yeah, so it's transformed the way the car feels even in low speed, sitting there in the shop pushing it around. It's a featherweight. It's great.
Does the in a lot of the display at SEMA and in these photos from Speed Hunters, there is no rear hatch on the car. Is
so
that,
it does have a,
it
rear,
has
hatch.
A rear hatch.
It does have one. So I think you can see it in a couple of photos.
Yeah.
But of course, it was a bummer at SEMA. I really want the engine cover on the car because it finishes the body lines. It absolutely is missing that whole sail panel shape in the back. But the second I would put it on, because I'd want people to take photos of
it. It just looks like a Ferrari with a body kit at that
everybody
point.
Come up, when are you taking it off? When can we see the motor? I mean, like split second. Like, oh, is it coming back off? So it's everybody wants to see the engine.
Do you have to like do work to take it on and off?
It just pops off. So it's on with, it's a factory steel engine cover, but it is attached now with like quick release pins so I can work on everything. But the unfortunate side is it's a two-person job.
Yeah, you have to lift the thing off.
Yeah, you got
to
get it off, and you got to come around the wing.
And when you, that's annoying. So is the aero kit, is that actually like designed, done in CAD, or did you just make it so it,
it
looks cool and hopefully it works?
No, the aero on the car was designed by my buddy's company, RS Future. So Amir from RS Future has a K20 NSX, which he lent a lot of, you know, essentially R&D. I got to ask him all sorts of questions about how he solved so many problems, right? His car is a Time Attack car. It was formerly a street car, fastest street class Time Attack car in the United States. He just moved it up to the unlimited class. So like this NSX, they hacked it off from the strut towers back and strut towers forward. It's all spindly tube that weighs nothing. This thing weighs like under 2,000 pounds now.
Oh, wow, cool.
But all that to say, this guy knows his aero. He has a reputation for basically putting aero on the fastest Time Attack cars on the West Coast. So I went to him and I said, hey, I need aero for this thing. We're going to stick it down to the concrete. Going to stick it down to the asphalt. You do you.
So do they like laser scan it or?
So he didn't laser scan it, but he came out, he made all sorts of templates and stuff. The wing profile itself is his own profile, his own design. A lot of it kind of comes down to me saying, hey, you tell me what I need to do, and when the parts show up, I'm just going to put them on the car. Mm-hmm. I'm not an aerodynamicist. I don't have any business trying to solve that. I don't even ask the questions because it's right over my head, you know? So, but the aero package closely mimics the aero package he developed for his NSX, which is a very similar car.
Yeah.
Very, very similar car. So we can revise it as we need to. I don't know if we'll ever wind up putting it in a wind tunnel. I mean, that'd be sick if somebody has a wind tunnel they want to let us spend some time in. But yeah.
There's probably one around.
I think a lot of it will come down to testing at the track. Do we need more, rear downforce, front downforce? Mm-hmm. What's the car doing? How's it behaving?
Yeah.
The only aero part on the car that's not on it at the moment is there is a full carbon, perfectly flat bottom floor that goes on it as well. But moving it around with that on there, if you're not at a racetrack where it is perfect asphalt, it's a pain.
Look at your rear
The diffuser
splitter.
Is
your
pretty hardcore.
Huge.
Yeah. Is it? Do you plan on street driving this thing at all, or not really?
So a huge point of the car and a lot of the decision-making processes was I do want to drive this thing on the street. Not often, I'm not going to go just get groceries in it. But if I want to come up here for something, take it to some Cars and Coffee, who knows what? I want to be able to do that. Can it be driven with the splitter and the diffuser on it? No.
Yeah.
No chance. I thought maybe I'd get away with it, even just driving it around my shop. I mean, the slightest imperfection of the road, and it's just making the worst noises.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I know that if I tried to make a trip down the 405, it's going to be a disaster, and I'm going to wind up with a splitter that is
underneath
my car.
Someone else will have a splitter because it'll fall off.
Exactly.
Wow. Yeah, That's a bummer because it looks cool, but
it looks pretty sweet.
That makes sense.
The splitter is your rear bumper at this point because it sticks out the furthest, I think.
This photo. It's basically flush with the back of the wing at the moment. So
this thing is awesome. I'm very impressed. And
I appreciate it.
It does. It looks rad as hell.
It looks rad, and it sounds like it should turn, go, stop well enough.
You
did your homework, and then you can fine-tune fiddle things. And
did you have to put a roll cage in it for this Time Attack thing, or what?
So it has to have a roll bar in it.
Uh-huh.
I haven't fully caged the car, and that has been probably one of the biggest struggles I've had inside, is I know that the car would benefit from a full cage, like we joked earlier. If this thing makes 1,000 horsepower, that chassis is going to just turn into a potato chip.
Yeah.
But
I don't know.
I also know that if it is fully caged, I'll never drive it on the street. One, it's not safe to do.
No.
I mean, there's no headroom in it as it is. But two, it's also just like getting in and out of a caged race car sucks. I'm not going to want to do that. I have caged cars in the past and then realized very quickly, just trying to street drive these is terrible.
Yeah. Is it... how did you come up with 1,000 horsepower other than saying that it sounds cool? Or is that pretty much it?
No. So 4 Piston Racing built the engine. They offer a crate engine package called the KT1000. It is a formula they have developed through years and years and years of racing. They have sold countless of these engine packages, and they make 1,000 horsepower all day. It's built to make 1,200 horsepower. I called them up. I said, hey, look, I'm coming to you because I know that you're kind of the name in this K-Series platform. Here's what I want. I want an engine that will make 1,000 horsepower at the wheels, and I want it to do it without breaking a sweat. You tell me how we need to get there, and then I'm just going to pay you, and that's going to be it. I don't want to cut any corners. I'm not trying to pinch pennies. I want a 1,000 horsepower at the wheels race engine that will last.
And so they then tell you what kind of turbo and what kind of this and that you need?
No, they say, here is the engine. It's probably good for 60 PSI of boost. It is basically, you shove enough air in this thing, it will hold it. You're going to make 1,000 horsepower. Here you go.
Holy crap,
so,
man.
And
it weighs, it's a light car. So I'm thinking you're on road courses. This thing would be exciting with 600.
Yeah, so to be clear, the 1,000 horsepower thing is for the YouTube
for the gram.
Thumbnail, right? Hey, we did it. And of course to stick it in the face of the guys who have complained about putting a Honda engine in a Ferrari and how much better that V8 was, I don't think anybody's probably made 1,000 at the wheels with that F106. I know they can make a ton of power. But
yeah, I mean, some people, I've seen some turbo kits on them.
Yeah, they definitely, I know that there are guys in the 6, 7, probably 800s for sure.
Yeah.
And if you want to throw a ton of money at one, there's no question it could make 1,000.
Yeah.
But it's also, I mean, this engine makes 1,000 off the shelf for less than what I sold the core engine out of the car for on Bring a Trailer. So, Yeah, just to hit that number, and then we're going to throw a much smaller Garrett turbo on it, and it will make the most bulletproof, like, 500 horsepower ever.
Yeah.
And then
at
we'll
a certain point, it would become almost undrivable. I mean,
yeah, it's not going to be drivable with 1,000 horsepower. Yeah. It's going to be ridiculous. It's not. It's not actually usable. It's just to do it.
If you can get a 500 or 600 where it makes power from 3 to 8, and you got a nice wide power band, that would be really nice.
Exactly. That's the real goal. Is honestly even something in like the fours. The car is going to be terrifyingly fast. Yeah. at 2,300 pounds, like, it's gonna move. So
yeah, and I'd be worried about, you know, brake lock up and stuff like that at that point. If you're going 170 on the fucking front straight of a track, like, oof.
Yeah. Yikes. So fingers crossed. I mean, like, we've got some pretty gnarly brakes on it. I went with the AP Racing Pro 5000R Radical system, and it's meant to stop a full size Corvette. I just crammed them on a very tiny car. So 6-piston front and 4-piston rear. So like I said, it's a ton of brake under the car, a ton of tire, 275 front, 315 rear, with room to fit more if I felt the need to, but I think we're going to be just fine with that.
Is your turning radius limited? Can you go full
It goes full lock.
Without rubbing?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. It used to rub on the upper control arms. That was one control arm revision. It's like all the geometry was good, and then I put all the parts on the car and realized I was limiting my steering and running my wheels into the upper control arms. So
yeah, that would be a problem.
Just things like that you probably could figure out if you put it all in CAD, but mm-hmm. when you don't have your wheels yet and you're trying to figure it out, sometimes you just miscalculate.
Yeah. That's fucking crazy, man. That's fucking so much work. Awesome. And it's, what is it, 2 years it took
you? Yeah, about 2 years. I bought the car, and it showed up in, I want to say, November. Actually, yeah, it'd be like 2 years this week is when that car showed up from New York. That's pretty
cool. I like what you did with the pass-through on the front radiator, too. That's nice. Do you have fans on there still?
So, yeah, it's got, at the moment, they're not mounted, but it's all set up for a pair of Spall fans. It's all wired into the PDM. It all comes on automatically, nice. All that kind of stuff. The hood was built. Are you familiar with Son of Cobra?
No.
You should familiarize yourself with him. So he's in Orange County. I'm sure you've probably encountered his car. I think he brought his 2002 to Car Week.
Uh-huh.
It's the full carbon fiber 2002, BMW 2002. Yeah, here you go.
I don't know if I've seen that.
If you type in, yeah, Son of Cobra 1602 or 2002.
Where does that name come from?
You'd have to ask him. I have no idea. But incredible composite work.
Huh.
He's built this 1600 that is a... Yeah, there it is.
Oh, wow. Look at that thing. That's fucking nuts.
Incredible.
Really? I don't know if I've seen this car. That looks cool as hell. Wow.
Yeah, the entire car is carbon. Wow. Every part of the car is carbon.
That's pretty cool.
Every panel... roof, everything, and then it's S14 powered out of an E30 M3.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
It's an insane
I bet that's
car.
Rowdy.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
So he made
your frunk?
He made the frunk, the cover. I essentially went to him with the factory hood that I had hacked up and like made this duct that was all garbage TIG welded together, and I was like, hey, dude, please do something with this.
Yeah.
And that's what he turned out, was this amazing carbon hood, huge duct that seats perfectly to the radiator. The whole thing is like 9 pounds or something.
Wow, that's
super
cool.
Super lightweight. So that's the only composite panel on the car. Everything else is still steel.
What is have you changed the weight distribution significantly?
No. On the scales, granted, I don't know. I'd have to go back and look and see what the front and rear balance of the 308 or 328 is mm-hmm. stock, but it's 40 front, 60 rear.
Okay.
Which is pretty spot on for a mid-engine car.
Yeah.
It's kind of what you aim for. I could move it around a little bit if I need to, but I'm super happy with how it wound up landing.
Yeah.
Just exact 40-60 split. It was like 40.2 front.
Yeah. Did you find anything in the car where you were like, wow, this is how they sold this thing?
Everything underneath the skin. So I have this interesting kind of journey, so to speak, with the concept when people complain about, oh, these old Ferraris, they're turds or pieces of shit, or you know, it's like a kit car or whatever. And when I bought the car and I started tearing it apart, one of the things that I liked most about it, what I thought was really cool, is so much of it, you can tell, was built or engineered by real car guys looking at this thing trying to figure out a problem. And you know, maybe it's the way something attached or something's mounted or, you know, what have you, doesn't really matter. You can look at it and be like, yeah, like, I understand why it's this way. This is cool. It's not just some, like, mass-produced something or other. And so it really kind of irked me to hear people say, like, yeah, these cars are trash underneath. Now, there are certainly people that have taken a 308 down as far as I have. I mean, I cut out everything. Gave myself access to metal that Ferrari never anticipated anybody getting back to.
Mm-hmm.
It is a turd underneath. I'm sorry, but it's awful. Like, the weld quality and just, like, the fabrication work. I mean, it's scaffolding it's, would be polite.
Yeah.
But does it matter if the car works well? No, probably not. But, yeah, that's probably, like, the most egregious flaw that I found was just, like, the quality of work that lurks underneath what they expect you to never see.
Yeah.
Which, in a sense, is understandable. Like, what does it matter what the you know, tube structure underneath the floor of the trunk is?
Yeah.
But when you're really in there and you're trying to make it look good and you're trying to improve it, I found myself cursing at the Italians for a moment there.
Do you know what kind? Could you tell what kind of welding they did back then? I have no idea. Was this like arc? Well, no, but I mean, like, is it arc by hand or TIG by hand? Or, I mean, robots seem like they came
in
more
recently,
not
robots. I mean, I would guess a lot of it's, if I had to guess, stick welded. I'm not great. Wow.
Have they even invented TIG welding then?
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, there was TIG welding, I would think. I don't know if they had MIG guns. Honestly, I don't know. I mean, like, I know how to weld. I don't know weld history, but
whatever the standard was at that time, they used something 20 years prior,
yeah,
probably.
It's just, like,
really offensive when you look at something like the Lamborghini Murcielago, which was built from 2002 to 2010. And it's like, all right, the 308 came out in the late 70s, but could really date back to the 60s.
Sure.
So you go, all right, you know, these fucking artisans and they're, you know, smoking cigarettes and having espressos. And even the state of the company at that point was still, you know, Enzo had some contempt for their customers. It was really about the racing. So it's kind of forgivable. But, like, when this is a car, when, like, Audi owns the company and it's from 20.
And that's what's coming out.
And the box steel that they're using in that thing, you're like, holy shit, this went a lot further than it really should have.
Entirely. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things, like, I can totally understand why the car the way that it is, and I don't hate it for it. It's just one of those things, like, when I'm trying to make the best car that I can.
Yeah.
I found myself so frustrated. There were several times where I was like, man, I really wish I had just cut the entire chassis off of this car and started from scratch and just built my own tube chassis.
Yeah.
I'm probably glad that I didn't. I'd still be working on it and instead now.
Well, look,
I have a car
mine
to enjoy,
drives but like it's supposed to drive from the factory and the experience isn't bad.
Yeah.
You know, when people talk about these cars being like turds, I genuinely think they're driving cars that have not been
just
maintained properly.
Versions.
They're tired, and it's not even that it's junk version. It's just like not maintained to the standard that they probably need to be. Like when we did the all new factory bushings and all new factory control arms and all new factory shocks, like it was like a total game changer.
Yeah, well, that's all I mean by junk version. It's like some guy who just like hasn't maintained it couldn't actually afford to own that car.
Yeah.
When I say the car is junk underneath, I just mean like it's made out of junk.
Yeah.
You know, but it's still a good vehicle. I mean, like the 308 and the 328, like they have a reputation for a reason. I mean, like I think it was Bob Bondurant even said like the best handling car I've ever driven when it came out.
Yeah.
So like good car, amazing engine, great dynamics.
For the time, like they were really nice.
But,
and mine, now that it's been restored mechanically, you know, you want to talk about a 30-year-old car that is perfectly happy to go 100 to 110 miles an hour on the highway
there's not
for
a ton of
hours.
Those. Yeah.
I mean, I just drove it to Phoenix and back, and I was flying, and it did not. The car was perfectly happy. You know, the real comfort settled speed is like the high 90s. And for a 35-year-old car, like, that's not normal.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you understand why, like, those cannonballers were fucking all about these things at the time.
Yeah. Now, what power does the 328 make? Do you know what that
factory
power is? The
factory rating power is 270.
270.
So it's plus 50 over the injected 308s.
Plus 70 over mine. So the 81 GTBI two-valve car.
Yeah.
is 202 factory rated.
Yeah, that's not a lot.
And so I dynoed it.
And also mine's a plus 50 torque over the 308 also, which is a big difference.
So when I dynoed it, we had 163 horsepower at the rear wheels.
Yeah.
So in, with paired with a 3,200-pound car, I have said in the past, if I had paid what I paid for that car and was expecting to kind of fall in love with that Ferrari driving experience, if this was my introduction to that,
sure,
I would have been let down.
Yeah.
But also, again, worth mentioning, like I bought the least desirable one you could get.
Yeah, that's not a great year. It's peak smog controls, but before you got the four valve engine, which did improve it a bunch. I've driven Donnie's car a bunch, which is very good. It's a four valve GTB.
Okay.
And if you rev it out and really wind it out, it's pretty good. My car is much quicker than Donnie's car in a straight line. The power difference is noticeable. My car actually feels kind of fast. I mean, if you wind out third gear,
that's considerable.
It's not bad. But I wanted a vintage experience. I wasn't expecting. You know, when we could still buy a manual 360 or 430, even though it was expensive, we were like, fucking 308s, 328s, get out of here. That shit is fucking, they're dogs. But now that that kind of experience is not available from the factory anymore, the cars are very fast, but they're very digital. You can't row gears anymore. So now it doesn't matter anymore, and that experience is considered desirable. The cars are small, they're relatively light, they're relatively simple. The gated shifters are great, you know, and by Ferrari standards, they're not particularly expensive to run.
Absolutely.
Certainly much less expensive than a Testarossa or a 355 or something that needs an engine out.
Yeah, I mean, it's known as like the beginner Ferrari. You can even work on it yourself.
People
don't have to like pull the engine out just to service it or do timing belts or what have you. I think, so a really good buddy of mine has a 308 GTB carbureted car. Uh-huh. So like an extra 40 horsepower completely transforms the car.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, just way quicker off the line through the RPM band. If I had gotten that car, I probably would have been more motivated to maybe see if I could make that engine work.
Yeah, my friend's got a carb GTB and it rips.
Yeah.
It feels completely different. It feels, it revs different. It takes a little longer to start.
Yes, it does.
But it makes a really cool sound. It's fucking rowdy. It spits oil all over the place out of the exhaust. It's a rowdy car. That's super cool. What else have you been working on? Or has this consumed your life for the last 6 months?
Yeah, this has been about it. I guess since last time I was here, we were talking about my E28 Group A Tribute race car. In that time, I decided, I love building cars. I'm going to do this for other people. I opened up shop with my buddy Riley Stair. I don't know if you've met him, but he has the insane Trans Am with the 8-to-1 header at SEMA a handful of years ago. It was like the star of the show. Doesn't matter. Talented fabricator.
8-to-1 header sounds familiar, but
it was a big deal car. Everybody knew that car for a moment.
Like a 70s Trans Am? Yep. I do remember it now. That car
was an incredible car.
Yeah.
Guys, most talented fabricator
like
I know.
It was like fucking, it had the fender wells cut real high, right?
Full race car
shit. Yeah, now I remember that thing. That thing was awesome.
Fuck off crazy.
Yeah, it was real cool. Is that car still around?
Yeah, he's still got it.
That thing was cool as fuck. It was white, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
He's been improving it through over the last number of years.
Yeah, that thing.
That's the one.
That car rules. That looks great.
But yeah, one of my closest friends and we said we both love building cars. We said, dude, let's do this for real. Let's do this. Let's make some money. Let's chase his dream. So we actually took my shop and opened up shop.
And now it's a customer shop.
Well, it was. We did that for 2 years, and I realized I don't like working on other people's shit.
They're so demanding when they're paying.
Yeah, I know. It's the worst. Everybody wants something one way, and I want to do it a different way. Or, you know, for me, cars are like a creative outlet, right? And so when you strip the creative side away and you're just melting metal together for somebody, that's not fulfilling. I don't want to be, you know, 50 rolling them around on my back in some dude's car welding a roll cage together. Like, nah, no thanks. So realizing like I wasn't getting the creative outlet and I also wasn't wrenching on my own car in those 2 years, I just kind of realized, oh, this was not the direction that I should have gone. This was wrong turn. So pulled a U-turn and kind of said, all right, let me go back to focusing on StanceWorks and just creating content. How can I pivot? Because like the blog has been a dying thing for years, right? It's all either YouTube or just like instant gratification on Instagram. So how can I pivot? How can I do what I want to do, which is build cars and make this work? And the answer was, all right, well, try this YouTube thing, which you've been doing for ages. And so I've just been chronicling the build of this Ferrari for 2 years. And thankfully, people have been very
receptive. Is it working out?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's like, it's my full time. It's an insane amount of work.
Yeah.
Anybody that doesn't do this has no idea. It is such an insane amount of work. It's more work than building the car, by far. 100%.
Yeah, making the video is harder. Oh, yeah. I mean, it is.
And recording everything, it makes it take 3 to 4 times as long to do any aspect of the car build, especially because I'm building the car myself, I'm filming the whole thing myself, editing it, publishing it, bottom to top, one-man operation. So there's been a learning curve, but I enjoy it. I get the creative outlet of doing the videos. I get to build the car that I want to do. I don't have to answer to anybody. And I've been having a blast. It's been awesome.
That's good.
People have been receptive to it. And I've been trying to like really focus on like make the content the way you want to do it. Don't go chasing the views. Don't like cater to the comments necessarily. Like just do your thing, because if that will grow, if people will watch that, then you can maintain like the happiness. It doesn't feel like work. But the second that I'm like, oh, I got to make the people happy, I got to do X, Y, or Z, that starts to go down that same path of like, it kind of sucks building other people's cars.
Sure.
So, it's been working. I'm at 141,000 subs. So nothing crazy. Still small in the YouTube world.
Yeah, but the videos are getting good traffic. The individual videos are getting good traffic. So.
Yeah. The viewership ratio for my audience size is fantastic.
Don't matter so much anymore.
It's all minutes watched.
It's minutes watched, and it's getting in the fucking algorithm, which actually is very depressing. I finished the Chaos Machine, and goddamn, do I hate everything. It's the worst.
Which book is this?
Didn't you get it for me, Chaos Machine? It's basically about how when Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok just went hard at the paint on on-screen engagement. Keep you, like, and they wrote these machine learning algorithms that have the possibly unintended or possibly intended side effect of funneling you towards more and more extreme content very rapidly. It's really, really like it basically society collapses. But you basically have a situation where people's views online are shaped by this algorithm, because the recommended just funnels you from, if you're looking, you want to literally look up about vaccines, information about vaccines. Mm-hmm. The recommended section will be like 70% vaccine skepticism, but focused on, you know, sort of not quite extremist, but like healing and herbs and stuff like that. And then you'll quickly get funneled into like real hardcore,
just off the deep end.
Yeah,
shit.
Yeah, and it'll happen. Like there's these studies they show where it's like they come up with control humans. I create a character that's like a 41-year-old housewife from Detroit who's this and this and has these attributes, and you make this person a Facebook profile, and then you look up some fairly benign shit. And then you just follow the rabbit hole of suggested groups, suggested videos. And within 48 hours, you're like in QAnon.
I've heard quite a bit about this.
And it's crazy. And it's horrible. And it's totally a conscious choice by the social media companies to use
the algorithms that happen, that allow that to happen, and it and they know it because in certain areas where it's gotten real sketchy, they turn the algorithms off for short periods of time, and it fixes it. Yeah. It like literally, it's like just fucking nuts. And so in terms of cars, you know, you can go from car review to Honda swapped Ferrari build to fucking, that's why it's the same. Like, why does everyone think we need 1,000 horsepower? It's the same reason, you know, it's just in the context of cars. And so if you've made your life about YouTube and you're reading what these three or four big companies have control over and how they used our own worst impulses against us, it's fucking terrible. It's really depressing.
Yeah, that's a book that I am not going to read. That's
yeah,
not
don't.
Help.
I mean, don't unless you want to.
It's
going
to be the feel-good movie of Christmas, by the way.
Yeah. It was a really interesting book. I read it on this past trip, but like, I was like, oh my God, this is all so terrible. And like, just the way it's impacted, like, genocides. I mean, literally fucking genocides and turned entire towns who get their whole all their news is from Facebook, all of it, and it just is like almost overnight they like all hate Muslims or they all hate this one tribe, and like they Facebook they'll organize this fucking some crazy, you know, they'll burn down the whole village because they were reading on Facebook that these people are drinking the blood of children or some shit.
I mean, I had to get off. I deleted my Facebook a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah. Can't have Facebook.
A handful of years ago at this point. For, honestly, probably the exact same reason of just like the incessant amount of shit just getting funneled to everybody and all the misinformation and craziness and just like everybody constantly arguing about shit that does not matter. I
haven't had Facebook in over 10 years and I don't miss it at all. But like Facebook is definitely the one that's like the in your face worst offender. YouTube was the DL worst offender that doesn't get talked about or brought up as much, but was responsible for a vast percentage of radicalization, especially among white supremacists and fucking flat earthers and like all kinds of shit like that. Yeah. So anyway, it's a very depressing book, The Chaos Machine by Max Fischer. But if you really want to fucking learn
if I'm
some
trying
things.
To mellow out, if I'm yeah, trying don't. To bring myself
no,
down
no,
a
no,
bit.
Don't.
Next
don't
time I'm, I'm like riding a real high, when I get back from the dyno and I need to bring it back down a notch.
The numbers, the engine works, everything's great.
I'm going to go fuck some shit up here now. Yeah. I'm going
to
open
that
book
I spent 26 hours each way going to Spain and back this week doing is reading a book that made me very depressed. And then I spent $8 on the Wi-Fi last night so I could watch Twitter completely implode, which was very fun.
You really know how to make an emotional sandwich for yourself,
I gotta say.
You're traveling for a long time and reading depressing books.
I know.
And the flights were like almost delayed.
I flew 26 hours each way for seven laps of a racetrack.
26 hours to get to Spain, you said?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I had to fly. I flew from L.A. to Atlanta to Munich and then had to wait in Munich for a charter flight to Seville.
No thanks.
And so door to door, it was 26 hours each
way. For seven laps.
Seven laps in an R8, Audi R8 GT on a racetrack. No. I mean, doesn't mean anything about the car.
Just
the car.
Doesn't matter what it was.
Doesn't matter what it was. Not worth it. No. No. Unfortunately not. It was not because of anything that Audi did, not because of anything that was anyone's fault. Like, nobody fucked up. Like, it's.
Maybe. When you got there, you were in a little bit of a down mood. Maybe you read something that kind of mellowed you out a little bit.
No, I just it was a very good life lesson that I cannot. If my whole job was writing articles and nothing else, it may have been worth it. Yeah. But the amount of shit that piled up during that 4 days, the vast majority of which I was spent not driving the R8 GT. It was not worth it. No.
The
life lesson.
The worst automotive trip that I have taken is in a similar light. We were shooting for Team RLL, BMW Team RLL, photographing for them a number of years ago. And we photographed Petit Le Mans.
Mm-hmm.
So we had already been up at Atlanta, Road Atlanta, hiking around endlessly, getting photos, hours and hours and hours and hours on end. And then they were like, hey, we're boarding you on a plane. So we leave the racetrack, go straight to the airport.
They Which is fly not close.
Us, not close. We fly straight shot to Munich.
Uh-huh.
I believe it was Munich. We get off. They shuttle us straight to Hockenheim.
Oh, God.
We photograph. I'm not kidding. We photograph a 45-minute DTM race. We go back to the hotel, and I think it was 4 hours later, go back to the airport and fly back to Southern California.
Oh.
It was the most brutal,
yeah,
awful trip. We were there for – we were on German soil, I think, for like 16 hours.
Hours, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Like, you came
hours.
Back, you're like, I got to learn to fabricate some stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not doing this anymore.
No, and we were just this morning talking about this with Richard Porter. If you talk about – this sort of globe-trotting thing with someone who never gets to go anywhere, you sound like a piece of shit.
Oh, yeah.
For saying that it's not great. But, like it's when it's that much travel for that little seat time, and, like, it the fact that it was in Spain, like, just was completely irrelevant. There was but nothing Spain
Spanish
about it.
It,
it was,
yeah,
like, hotel to racetrack to airport. Like, there was nothing, you know, could have been fucking anywhere.
To put it in perspective for people, like, if anyone has ever, like, gone to a birthday party, but it took them 5 hours to get there,
yeah,
or you went on, a trip with your family, and then when you, any trip or anything you've ever done where you got home and you went, I don't know if we're going to do that again.
Yeah.
Like, is that worth it? It's like, it's the same thing. And
yeah.
So it just, you just got to.
It was 7 hours of travel per lap of the racetrack.
That is an awful statistic.
Imagine driving 7 hours to go one lap around a racetrack. That's nope. What it was.
Nope.
And when is this? This is airing what, next week?
Yeah.
Okay, so I mean, yeah, you'll check out my review on Road and Track, and the video of the car will be up. And it's a very nice car. They've done a great job. There's nothing, I don't have anything to complain about the car. Rear wheel drive, lightweight wheels, aero kit, you know, fast, fun Audi R8. Like,
sure.
And actually, they did do something nice. They gave each of us, each journalist there, two full sets of tires, one on the RS3 and one on the R8 GT, and they had a football field size skid pad.
Whoa.
With some obstacles, and you got 5 minutes to fucking have at it.
That sounds
really.
Yep.
That
and
sounds pretty. You right.
Either
that's
you get
the deal.
You get 5 minutes or until the tire blows, and
wow,
you can have fun. And I fucking drifted the fuck out of these tires. I went through every bit of every millimeter of rubber they gave me. And that was fun. Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed that, and I appreciated those tires. But it was a long fucking way away. You don't get to drift R8s very often.
No.
That's not
how long were you in Spain for this? What was the turnaround time?
I landed in Spain Tuesday. I left L.A. Monday morning, landed in Spain Tuesday at 5 o'clock p.m., had dinner, went to bed, drove the car on Wednesday, and then flew back Thursday, left Thursday morning. I had maybe 30 hours on the ground in Spain.
No thanks.
I did walk around Seville for an hour. And I learned that if you like to eat fucking jamón ibérico,
mm-hmm,
and drink red wine,
that's the place.
That is the place. You cannot bring it back, but you should enjoy it while you're there.
I'll add that to the list.
Add it to the list, for sure. Yeah. Do we have anything on the Patreon? Of course, if you want to ask questions of us or our guests, if you want to get an ad-free listening experience, if you want to get the show the day it goes up rather than waiting till the next Tuesday or Thursday, you're going to want to be a patron. Patreon.com/TheSmokingTirePodcast. Oh, you can also get, at the pro driver level, an extra podcast every month just for you. It's like a Zoom call, basically, for just
but
you.
But far more entertaining.
You
gotta sell it, Matt.
Let's see. Michael Cosgrove, when are you going to let us film a video with the 308? Can we film the video with the 308 at some point?
100%.
The
biggest problem is there's no chance you're gonna fit in that
car.
That's
a problem.
No chance.
Maybe it's a Zach one.
You wanna drive it?
Fuck yeah. What are you crazy? Of course I do.
I'll bring mine for reference, but it's gonna be a
there
Zach. It's gonna be a Zach drive. I didn't think
shorter,
I would fit in that car.
I'm gonna be shorter and weaker than most of my friends.
What if I bring my own seat?
I need a payoff.
I mean, we could move the seat back. I mean, it is adjustable, but it's still a tight fit in there.
It's a little seat. It's a seat for you.
Yeah, you want to bring a seat? Well, I'll make some seat mounts for you.
You got the stock seats still?
Hell no. Come on.
Take the, just take the seat out. Like,
I gotta borrow. I'll borrow a seat from somebody.
Just sit against the
firewall.
We'll
just take the seat out of your car.
Yeah, right.
Put it into mine. Yeah. Be good to go. But yeah, if you guys want to drive it, I'd be stoked on it.
Be fucking
good
fun.
Good Lord, yes.
When it's tuned and ready, hell yeah. Chris Navio, we kind of covered this one. What inspiration did you use visually when designing the car?
I mean, honestly, so the entire reason that I bought that car, chose that platform, is I think the 308 is one of the most beautiful cars ever made. It checks every box for me. Really, the only cars above it would be a 288 or an F40. Mm. I'm not going to be able to afford either of those anytime soon.
Right.
So 308 it is. As far as where it went past that, I mean, being a Time Attack car and given the fact that it has a Honda engine in it, I wanted it to have an overall aesthetic that looks like, okay, yeah, maybe this is from Japan. This is a Japanese Time Attack car. So much of it is Japanese inspired. But I didn't want to, like, you know, beat people over the head with it. So
yeah.
Simple, but, you know, the Time Attack arrow is, you know, certainly a very specific style.
You should do a fundraiser to bring it to, like, Gatabil.
You think so?
Yeah.
Is that Sweden, right?
Yeah, Sweden, Norway, so somewhere in Scandinavia.
One of those.
It would be expensive to ship it, but you could probably do a GoFundMe, and people would probably pay a few dollars chip in to ship the car over there.
I would feel like such a dirtbag.
Why?
Asking people to fund that, even though they
Norway.
Might do it.
Norway?
Norway. There you go.
Yeah, asking people for money is weird. I get it, but, like, there's no business case for you doing it yourself.
It's also true.
And if you don't, if it doesn't go, it's not like you take their money anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You should definitely bring it to a Grid Life event.
Okay.
Absolutely, because they do Time Attack there.
Yeah.
And that's our version of Gatbil. And does Optima still do the Streetcar Invitational after SEMA?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's a pretty cool event. Are you familiar?
Yeah. I've seen, like, some of the they do.
It's a
like,
Time Attack event
stuff.
That's
yeah.
largely pro touring cars, mm-hmm. but there's other genres.
Handful of stuff
that,
in there.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
I'm surprised they didn't give you a fucking. I guess the car isn't quite ready for racing, but they have cars that are pre-registered for it before they get to SEMA,
and then they
give some golden tickets out during SEMA to get invites. But if it's not tuned and ready, that might be a good reason. Yeah, why.
No golden ticket.
Jimmy Utterstrom. I think is that. I don't know how to pronounce the umlauts, but let's go with that. What would be your dream build? I mean, this is pretty
yeah,
dreamy.
Honestly, like, so people ask that kind of regularly. The answer is, yeah, you're looking at it. I mean, I can't say that, like, cost is no object. I'm bound by what I've been able to afford to do, and thankfully I've had sponsors help make that happen, but I haven't approached it as anything other than, like, I'm building the sickest car I can conjure up, and that's it. So yeah, I mean, dream build right there. Then the next dream build will be whatever I do next. I have no idea.
Okay. John Blackburn, interesting question. It's kind of a false either or here. Would you modify a Honda Accord 2.0T automatic to make it closer to a Type R, or just buy a rear-wheel drive sedan like a BMW 550, Audi S4, that's all-wheel drive, and it's front-wheel drive-based all-wheel drive, by the way, etc. I have long commute on nice roads in Alabama, no track or autocross. Well, I certainly, personally, would not invest money in a Accord 2.0T. You're not making it very Type R-like.
Nope. yeah, wouldn't do that. Also, under no circumstance would I buy a 550.
Yeah, they're not
nope.
good.
Nope. Also, the very odd group of cars to cross shop right there.
It is an odd group of cars. I mean,
did you get a TSX or something?
Yeah.
Like, if you have long commutes, I mean, I don't know. There's also, this goes to the budget question. How much money do you have, John? So if you have a lot of money, you could get a new RS3, which would be great for everything you're describing. But if you don't have a lot of money, I don't know what, like, getting spare parts for Audis is like in Alabama, which is me just being ignorant to Alabama, but, like, I would get something that's going to work a long time and also be kind of fun.
Yeah, without a budget, I mean, I don't know, but your rear-wheel drive sedans are all kind of like expensive luxury cars, right? Unless you're talking about a Charger.
Yeah.
And again, do not buy that 550.
No,
don't do that.
No. Get a first-gen CTS-V. You know, I mean,
much better.
That'll
price.
Work
yes.
a long time. Interior's
yeah.
kind of.
But I wouldn't put money modifying an Accord 2.0T. You're not going to really be impressed with the results of that.
Yeah, that's flushing money down the drain.
Yeah, totally. Derek Yeagan, when you have a level of fabrication skill where you can almost build or fabricate anything, what is the cutoff when you realize that fabricating something yourself is not worth the time or effort?
I don't think I've had that question before.
Sounds like the carbon stuff. Is that just an expertise and an equipment situation?
Yeah, I mean,
like,
I always try to be really conscious of knowing when to ask somebody else for help, right? So I like to try to do everything I can. I've made my own carbon parts before, but I also know where there's like a threshold of if something can come out to the quality level that I want for whatever the given application is.
Mm-hmm.
I said to my audience, when I made my initial aluminum hood, modified the original hood on the Ferrari, I said, I'm super proud of what I have done here. I think this is sick and I'm very proud of it, but I will not put it on my car. It does not look good enough. I need to go to my buddy Paul, Son of Cobra, and say, hey, I need you to, you know, body work this and then make a mold and make it out of carbon and make something that is fitting of the car. As far as like when something's not worth fabricating yourself, because that sounds kind of on the other end of the spectrum, like when would I just have somebody else do something? I don't know. I think once you get good enough, it's just kind of like it gets easier and easier to do the small stuff. If I need like a small bracket or something, it's just like you just knock it out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I always try to remind myself like, hey, there is – it's okay to ask other people for help. It's okay to like turn to somebody else who knows more than you do.
Well, you didn't build the Honda engine.
Yeah, I don't need to do that. Could I do it? Sure, but what do I get out of that?
Yeah.
They're going to do a better job than I will, and it's like not consequentially more expensive to just have them do it than to me amass all the parts and pieces and go through all, you know, it's time is money too, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just when finding that threshold of when it's going to turn out better if somebody else comes in and helps or does it, or just like when your time, you know, you're going to spend too much time on it or what have you.
HUD, do you know of anybody who's swapped a Porsche engine into a Subaru? They've gone the other way a couple times. Subaru engines into Porsches. No, and I don't really know why you would. The Porsche engine is so much more expensive than the Subaru engine. It's not really worth
I don't know why you would
time.
Do it.
Yeah.
If you're going to go through the money side of Porsche engine swapping the car, just get the rest of the Porsche.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. Porsche engines are really expensive.
Insanely expensive.
Yeah. And so to put one into a Subaru, like, and not a lot of Subarus will fit the six-cylinder engine. Like, you wouldn't put it in an Impreza. Like, you have to put it in a Legacy.
Yeah.
And, like, well, now what's the point of that?
What are we doing here?
Yeah. RD Speed Garage said they put a Voodoo engine in a Falcon. That sounds cool.
Falcon sounds cool.
Okay, hang on. All right. So there's a lot of words in this one. I want to give it the shorter version. Okay, Lucas Taradas. If all of a sudden the government banned internal combustion immediately, but you could keep whatever internal combustion cars you own now until they rust away, how would you adjust your collections knowing that those would be the only internal combustion cars for the rest of your lives? I'm pretty happy with what I've got. I mean,
yeah, I mean, like, I've got most of what I feel like I like would want to own. I kind of run the gamut. I got a truck. I've got the Ferrari. I've got a hot rod. Got the beater. I've got an Audi. Some other junk sitting around.
I don't. I'm pretty much at the mountaintop for myself in terms of. Countach.
It borderline just kind of comes down to like, what other cars do you want if you had to keep them?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's nothing out right now where I'm going, oh, yeah, I need to get me one of those. So that's a boring answer to that question, I'm sorry to say.
Sorry, bud.
That's where I'm at. Jacob Brutt, thanks for being a good sport with Zwing's SEMA prank. What's that about?
A buddy came up at SEMA. And basically, he was all kind of dressed up, and then he had a gal with him, and they came up and they kind of said, yeah, we're with SEMA. I mean, they had, like, SEMA clothes on and all that. We're with SEMA, and your car, like, didn't you know, pass the vetting process for cars that are supposed to be on the convention floor. It's not like what we were told it was going to be. And I kind of said, what are you talking about? And they said, well, it doesn't have the Ferrari engine in it. So we have to remove the car from the SEMA floor. And so, like, yeah, we're going to pull it out after the show ends. And the exchange, I mean, it was funny in retrospect. The exchange was more awkward than anything, because the whole time I'm kind of like, what are you talking about? And I think several times, it's cut down on the Instagram post, but it's, I think I said several times, like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, there's not a vetting process. I've done this before.
Yeah.
90% of the cars here don't have the engine.
Yeah. Like, I kept saying, like, guys, I really don't understand. And then I was like, this is a weird joke. Guys, what? Okay, I get it, but now the joke can stop, because this is the weirdest joke anybody's played on me. And eventually I was just like, all right, let's run with this. And so I called Ravi of CSF Radiators over, whose booth I was in, and I was like, hey, they want to take the car out of the booth. And he was like, what? And then finally, right around that moment, I was like, none of this makes any sense. I even said in the clip, you can find, I said, guys, I flat out don't believe you. This doesn't make any sense. I'm not buying it. And then I was like, there's a camera over there.
Oh, yeah.
Let's wrap it up. And it was funny. I think it was a good idea in concept.
but you want to play that kind of joke on someone who's never been to SEMA before, right, and doesn't understand.
Yeah, when you've had a rusty rat rod BMW tube chassis thing there, like,
sir, they accept shit boxes here.
Yeah, so it's fine.
I'm only gonna pick one of James Cowley put three, but here we go. What are you waiting for? Mythical JDM wheels?
Yeah, there's lots of people asking about that. There's been kind of this like wheels chronicle through the build.
The wheels that are on it look pretty good.
Yeah, so the wheels that are on it, no, they're great. Rotiform ROCHs. Initially for the car, I had bought this old set of JDM wheels. We'll have some exclusive content here. Nobody even knows what they are. I haven't even told my own channel. I bought a set of old Advan Oni 3-spoke wheels.
I don't even know what they are.
Yeah, they're like these super old school.
Like 3-spoke?
3-spoke, crazy looking things.
Okay.
And
is that how it's spelled? O-N-I?
O-N-I.
Oh, those. Yeah, oh, yeah. That's super fucking 80s. I do know those.
Yeah. And yeah, so okay. I bought those and I sent them out to have them cut apart, because it's like a welded.
To make them into like a three-piece modern.
Super wide 17s. And it took forever to get them to actually like have spun. Uh-huh. I never got the front wheels. I still don't have them. It's been over a year. Well over a year. And then everybody says, well, like, what's going on? Where are they at? The other downside is I did get the rear wheels. They looked insane on the car. They looked awesome. But
they're funky, those wheels.
Oh, they're weird.
Yeah. Are they the ones with the rivets on them?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a full multi-piece wheel.
Okay, cool.
But, yeah, I test fit the rears on the front. And when I had collaborated with the guys working on the wheels, they had said, yeah, these will clear the brakes, whatever. No chance. Oh. They don't even come close to fitting. So the entire, even when someday, who knows when, off in the future, when these wheels do show up, when I get those front wheels in,
can't even use them.
The brakes. So yeah, we're sticking with what we've got. It's why I really
The ones you got are nice.
Oh, no, they're great.
These are really cool wheels for the right car. And I think it would be attention grabbing on the 308. But I think what you've got on there looks better.
Yeah.
The ones you have on there look very good.
I went to Rotiform and I said, guys, we've got a wheel crisis going on here. I'm never going to get them. They also don't fit.
We have a wheel problem here.
Yeah. We've got a wheel problem here. And so, yeah, they were awesome enough to sit down and we kind of ran through some ideas. They had this wheel kind of penned up for Brian Scotto's Audi.
Oh, cool. Oh, that would look good on that too.
Yeah. And so we kind of changed it a little bit. They built it out to the specs.
Think
they gave
ever
me
finish
all the...
that Audi.
I was going to say they probably had these around. They're like, well, Ryan's car's not.
Ryan's car's going to be on jack stands for the next 3 years. So
exactly.
Just take these.
But yeah, and then I think it was like literally within 2 weeks, I had custom forged wheels.
Nice.
On the
those
doorstep,
are one piece so. Or three piece?
They're three piece.
Oh, cool.
They look really
good.
Yeah,
those look great. Yeah, I would stick with those. I think there was one or two more, Zach. Okay, another one from James. At some point, you built a cool-looking trailer for Rusty. You haven't seen a ramp truck on the channel. Basically, what are you going to use to transport the Ferrari to the track?
I mean, the big ass truck that I drove here is what pulls it around. Mm. I have an open trailer that, I mean, I don't show it on the channel because it's like not interesting. It's just a open car trailer. I'm trying to buy, or loosely trying to buy, an enclosed trailer right now. A buddy, a friend of a friend has one. It's a like sick Hallmark Edge race trailer, fully finished inside and stuff, and the price is right.
Getting in and out of that Ferrari in a race trailer without opening the door would suck balls.
It sucks. It's what I borrowed. I borrowed a trailer for SEMA that was enclosed, and yeah, you have to push the car in and out of the trailer to do it. So yeah. It would need a winch up in the front. I will get out of the car outside and then just pull it up.
Yeah. I used to have to crawl in and out of windows hauling cars around, and I'm not the right size for it, but it was a disaster. I can't even imagine doing it on a car like that, even if you're small.
With the halo seat interfering with the window, too, I mean, it's like it's borderline impossible.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Last question. I didn't see who wrote this one, Zach. Anonymity, of course, regular. As an E28 BMW junkie, what modern, meaning 2010 and up, engine swap would be ideal for an E28? I wouldn't go that new.
Yeah, I mean, you're just begging for problems. I mean, like, if you want to stick that new, I mean, I guess if I were going to pick something that new, I'd probably swap in like an S65, the V8 from the 92 M3. Like, that's a bitchin' engine. I want to put one in something at some point, but like, that's an endeavor. That's not a swap that you're just going to like knock out in your yard.
Yeah.
So.
Does it start after like anything that's not an inline six, like S54 or older,
is
vastly more complicated, right?
Yeah, I think S54 is probably the newest you're going to want to go on that one. And even that's not an easy swap into an E28, but definitely doable.
Mm-hmm. So there you go, man. Well, thanks for coming down.
Thank you for having me.
I appreciate it.
It's great.
This is, I really wanted to, once I saw the photos of this thing done, I was like, oh, yep, definitely get Mike back down here to talk about this. This thing is fucking rad.
No, I've been excited to talk to you about it. I think you might have been the first person I told that I was going to get one.
I remember you telling me that you got the car. Yeah, it's awesome. I love those fog lights, those vintage Hellas. Those are cool.
Yeah, On the note of lights, we'll have one final thing. So the 328 has still has pop-ups, but it's got like kind of the fog lights in the front bumper, right?
Yes, it has fog lights.
And so the 308 does not have, it has like bumper mounted old brick fog lights. But in my opinion, the cars look super silly with the headlights up. It's very clear they were designed with
the headlights
down. I do too.
I hate driving
down.
With the headlights up.
You don't want them up.
Yeah.
And so I've talked about it so many times on the channel. I removed all of the actual pop-up guts out
really?
Of it. Those are just covers. They just stay down. They don't operate anymore. There's nothing underneath them. There are no headlights on the car. Those Hellas are now the car's headlights. Okay. So I figure. Like,
hopefully you don't have to argue on the side of the road with a cop about that.
I think it'll be the least of my worries. Yeah, I'm pretty sure there'll be bigger problems if I get pulled over. But yeah, no pop-ups for me.
Yeah, I hate driving with my fucking lights up.
It looks so stupid.
I hate it. Yes. It sucks.
Thank you.
Like, yeah, it's
so
good.
Clear the car was designed with no headlights, and they were like, well, we can have pop-ups so they actually disappear, like, but it's not supposed to have them.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's bold, and I like it.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you didn't do something like turn them into like, you know, like NACA ducts or something like that.
I toyed with it. I tried taking the grills that are above the headlights and extending them all the way down, and it wound up looking really weird.
That might look kind of goofy. Yeah.
And then I also thought about like,
Do the grills do anything now?
No.
Okay.
No, they don't do nothing. But they, I even thought about kind of making a headlight cap, if you will, that was like some sort of duct, like a NACA duct or something that would then like feed the brakes, and like everything just wound up looking goofy. And I think the nose of the car looks great. I was like, I'll just leave it alone.
Yeah. I wonder, can I buy that carbon hood? The carbon frunk?
I have a mold. So yeah, if you want a hood, we can make it happen.
Will it work on an otherwise stock front end?
You're going to have to like cut your spare tire well out and move your radiator. I know a guy who can help you with it.
That would be, that's a good like desert mod, you know, if you really want to for those traffic jams.
Mm-hmm.
Really get some pass-through cooling going on. Now my cooling system is all set up. We're good to go. But that's a cool fucking piece that would look rad on an otherwise stock car.
It's one of my favorite parts of the car. I don't imagine I'll ever sell another one. I mean, Paul gave me the full mold for the thing, and I paid for it. But it's kind of one of those like, hey, if I need to make a replacement, or if at some point I sell the car, you know, somebody, a future owner might need a replacement, I actually have had one guy who's doing a wide body 308 reach out and say, hey, like, would you make me a hood? We've been going back and forth about it. So if I sell one, that'd be pretty sweet.
Yeah.
If anybody else needs a hood.
It looks amazing. It really came out great. I have no problem with fucking changing any of the things that you changed.
Hey, I'll take that. I give no fucks. I appreciate it.
I think it's dope as hell. And of course, you can read all about it at StanceWorks.com, the StanceWorks YouTube channel. StanceWorks on Instagram. It's StanceWorks everything.
Yeah.
Just StanceWorks. All StanceWorks all the fucking time. BMWs and now fucking Ferraris. Yeah. I think this would have looked really good on a 308 GT4 also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the box flares would have worked on that sort of boxy Bertone design.
Yeah. I have had I've had a couple people say, like, hey, would you build another one? And I wouldn't want to build the exact same thing again.
Yeah.
And I also, again, like, don't know that I want to build something for someone. But if somebody said, like, look, you build it however you want and I'll just pay for it,
yeah,
I'd probably do it again.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe try some different flares.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely.
Have a good Thanksgiving.
Thank you so much.
It's been great. And patrons, thank you for your being patrons and asking your questions. And all of you, I hope you've had a good Thanksgiving because this show won't go up until after, right? This is the Tuesday after Thanksgiving.
Correct.
Yeah. I hope you've had a nice break and it's nice to be back. And we'll see you guys later this week. Bye.